Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, this is Michael Schenker. You're in the apartment of Frederick Strage.
Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. It is an unusual radio station. I've never been to a place like this.
It's actually my home.
But yeah, I know. This baby room... cot and the piano behind you and lots of pictures and lots of albums and things and bits and pieces and even a guitar. Are you a musician?
That's my daughter's guitar.
Oh.
She just got it.
Must be her, right?
It is.
Ah, wow. Amazing.
It's terribly out of tune, but we're going to get it fixed.
Ah, that's what I was given in front of thousands of people by jealous people who wanted to make a fool out of me.
Really? They did that to you?
Yes.
Was that in UFO or which band?
No, I don't want to mention any names, but bad, bad, bad. So, desperate people.
How did you react to that?
I wasn't really that aware of it. It's just recently it all comes back to me. Because in the middle years, you know, I left the scene. And I left planet Earth in my orbit to learn about life, about myself, experiment with music. You know, I've got three chapters in my life. You know, the first one is the Michael Schenker playing in a sandbox, having fun, you know, not expecting anything, not competing, not asking for anything, not asking for fame or for success, just having fun playing a guitar. When I reached Strangers in the Night, people were saying, Michael Schenker is God. I said, what? And then Rudolf called me up from America in 81 and said, like, Michael, they're all playing your guitar style. I said, what? I couldn't understand what happened. So I unconsciously, I think on a recreational level, created something that impacted a lot of people. So I became a trend maker in the 70s and created something for the 80s for people to play. And then I had my own band, MSG. You know, I had enough fame by then.
MSG, the Michael Schenker Group.
Yeah, I was very grateful that I was, even though not asking for fame, that I was granted to experience fame that early in life, so I was able to make a decision if I wanted to stay in the fame, in a lane of fame, or if I wanted to stay artist true to my own vision and experiment with music, get things out of my system, learn about myself. Who was I in the beginning? Why? You know. And now in the third part of my life, because of the middle years of all the learning and experimenting and getting everything out of my system, you know, by the way, in the middle years, you know, when Ozzy asked me to join him, he wouldn't have made any money with me because all I was doing was experimenting. And so, you know.
So Ozzy asked you to step in after Randy Rhoads.
Well, because
died,
I was Randy Rhoads' favorite guitarist, so I guess Randy always talked about me. So when Randy died, then Ozzy obviously went like, well, the next best would be Michael Schenker. That's what Randy always talks about, you know. But I am saying I wouldn't have made him any money because I was in a different world. I was experimenting. You know, the first song I wrote was In Search of Peace of Mind, you know, with this, on the Lonesome Crow album, Scorpions.
The Scorpions debut album.
Scorpions credited themselves for it, you know.
Really?
But I wrote the song in my mom's kitchen all by myself. It's actually pretty hard to play. Rudolph can't even play that. And credited himself, you know, for this song. And I have two tattoos on the back. One is born to overcome and born to be free. So if you put all three things together, you understand why I chose the middle years to focus on being an artist, dealing with life, you know, developing, you know, when you want to create muscles, you have to use tools. So crisis, obstacles, hurdles are all tools in order to develop and create new perceptions in life that may present realizations. And then once you have gone through something, they say, like, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. You own that experience, yeah. And you own that knowledge and that wisdom, you know?
Your latest album, Revelation, begins with the line, "It all began long ago, you have to understand. The boy became a rock star with a guitar in his hand. Dreaming on, nothing's ever changed." How do you feel looking back on your long career?
Well, the thing is, it was written by Michael Foss, you know. I wrote the music, Michael Foss, because he did such a great job with Warrior on Resurrection album and and The Last Supper. I wanted this time four songs where all the singers sing together, and Michael Foss is a Michael Schenker fan, 80s fan, Graham Bonnet fan, Gary Barden fan, and you name it.
He's a fan of all the members of the group.
Yeah. End of the 80s, and it's all about the 80s. So he wanted to be born. He actually wanted to be a rock star in the 80s. So I think he's singing about himself.
Oh.
So basically, he is a Michael Schenker fan. He fantasizes what it may have been like what I went through. But that's just his imagination. But what he's singing about is actually more about what he thinks it was like. But it is just his version.
I've always assumed that guitarists who have their own bands think that, you know, one singer is more than enough. You have four singers in the Michael Schenker Fest.
Yeah, I got five, actually.
And you even had a guest vocalist on the latest album.
Yeah, and they're all coming from Richie Blackmore's Rainbow. What's going on?
So you don't have a problem with, you know, that it gets too crowded around the mic stand?
Well, you know, it's like when I discovered that I had been playing the most popular music of Michael Schenker for so many years, but not with the original vocalist, you know, something clicked, you know. I went like, wait, this is the time now, you know, to get back to the roots, to team up with the original vocalist and play the original composition. I'm sure that the hardcore fan will appreciate that, and so would I. And so with the singers. The singers were waiting on the phone when I made that phone call. They were ready to go. And so were the musicians, you know. So it's a happy bunch of people. Yeah, now you're listening to Paranoid Black Sabbath. I love Ozzy. I love Black Sabbath.
Who doesn't? That's a great song.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Magic.
Can you remember when you first heard it?
Not really. That's more another song. I remember. I have a good story about the immigrant song, you know. But this one, I don't know where I heard it first. But, you know, I think actually the first song I heard from Ozzy was Black Sabbath, and I was shocked because it was a pop top. He was actually on Top of the Pops, you know. That song on Top of the Pops, Black Sabbath with a metal gong gong. but so spooky, you know. But it was the distortion of the sound, you know, and that crazy vocal, you know. But I remember when I heard that first, you know, I was with my band, The Cry, you know, and we were like 13, 14 years old.
Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath. Yeah. Did he inspire you in any way as a guitar player?
His sound, you know, it's for me. I started when I was 9, but when I was 14, 15, I started hearing that distorted guitar sound of Jimmy Page, of Tony. They did it all in their own little ways, Jeff Beck. But when the sustain came alive because of the distortion, that's when guitar became magic and became an endless combination lock. You could do anything with it.
I've always been fascinated by the story about how Tony Iommi chopped off his fingertips. He had an accident at work because he worked in a factory,
and then he had to what a life design.
And then he had to downtune the guitar so the strings wouldn't hurt his fingers as much. And that's basically how the sound became so dark.
Based on circumstances, a lot of things happened in my life based on circumstances. They are usually the best things. Actually lying Saturday morning, there was the show and on the radio introducing new releases. I just actually kind of half awake, looking forward to hear this program, and here it was, the new Led Zeppelin album was coming out, Zeppelin 3, and I was so happy. It was so fantastic, you know, and I was listening to it on the vintage a radio that we had in those days, you know. I was around 14, 15 years. Fantastic song and fantastic drummer. My favorite musician, John Bonham.
Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin. You played your first gig when you were 11 years old, I think.
But now, yeah, first gig 11.
And that was with the Scorpions, who started way back in
1965. I did a jam with the Scorpions, but I joined a band in the town where I was growing up called Enervates. But I played a couple of instrumentals with the Scorpions when I was 11. So actually, that was my first gig with the Scorpions.
And that was a nightclub. How did they manage to sneak you in? I thought they had
my parents came with me.
They came with you?
Yeah. Oh.
Your family is from Sarstedt.
Sarstedt. You could say Sarstedt near Hangover, but it's Sarstedt near Hanover.
So do people drink a lot in Sarstedt?
Yeah, it's just something that came out, you know, as a funny line.
But you seem to have really good musical genes in your family. Your brother Rudolf is with the Scorpions, of course.
Yeah, but he has got no talent.
No talent.
No, he's just a businessman in musicians' clothing.
But do you get together for family holidays?
Never.
Never at all?
Never. He ripped me off. I stay far away from him as I can. He's a bully.
What about your
sister? I'm 6.5 years younger. You should be ashamed of yourself, Rudolf. Get your shit together. Hit rock bottom and learn the good things about life. How to say thank you for helping you with Love Drive.
Yeah, that is a great album, Love Drive.
Yeah, but they never said thank you to me. Instead, they trashed me.
They did?
Because they couldn't have me. They couldn't have me in the band. I wrote Lights Out when I was 21 in 76. 2 years later, they wrote Love Drive with the same song. Then they asked me to help them out because Matthias couldn't do it. And then they never even said thank you. I played throughout the whole album. Dieter Dierks asked me, can you put, after I finished all my other stuff, can you put all your sprinkles all over the album? Many people don't know that. To make this album sound fresh and sparkling and get the Michael Schenker character on it. Then with Blackout, they copied the Love Drive album because they didn't know what else to do. So basically, if I had not left UFO, I would have never done the Love Drive album. If I had never done the Love Drive album, where would be the Scorpions today? And now all the re-releases in Russia and in China, where the people are more new, they don't even know that I was part of Love Drive. I had a contract with the Scorpions as a sixth member of the Love Drive album. There was supposed to be a picture there. They left the picture out. Breach of contract. They left all my songwriting credits out. They left out. Then Rudolf asked me if he can play the Black and White Flying V. So to make it look like in America, when the album was released, there was nobody missing. There was a black and white guitar, there was a Schenker, and there was then later a Schenker with blonde hair. Yeah, and he totally distorted my image. And, you know, that's basically why I have that album cover design the way it is. It was based on them approaching me in 2015 to help them with the Scorpion set box. But when I saw the Love Drive story, a complete lie, a complete made-up story, I was very, very upset.
So for people who don't know your story, you started off in the Scorpions in 1972. Then you left after a few years and you joined UFO, the British band.
Well, let's say it like this. What would have happened if I had not joined the Scorpions as a 15-year-old, getting international instant recognition, especially with Klaus together? What would have happened if I wouldn't have gotten the Scorpions, Uli Roth, to replace me, Uli John Roth, when I joined UFO? What would have happened if I had not joined UFO, taking the Scorpions with me step by step, album after album, like Metallica did with Megadeth? What would have happened if I had never left UFO, and what would have happened to the Scorpions then? There would have been no Tokyo Tape, there would have been no Love Drive, no nothing. So Love Drive is the bridge, the path that I paved for Rudolf to have success without talent.
You wrote UFO's most famous song, Doctor Doctor. Let's listen to it. For a lot of people, this song means that Iron Maiden is getting ready to go on stage, because they always play this song as the final song before the curtain drops. Do you make money every time Iron Maiden plays it?
I have no idea. I never watch any of my royalty statements. Never.
Do you still play this song live from time to time as an encore?
Oh,
right?
We play Doctor Doctor. It's a party song. People love it. Sometimes we even started the show with that song, you know? I was actually 17 when I wrote it, and it was an instrumental.
I was thinking about your family and, you know, musical genes, because your sister was a keyboard player with Viva.
Ah. It means nothing.
German rock group. And your son, Tyson, is in a band called Madre's Son, which is a...
Tyson is doing good.
He
wants me to
player.
Listen to his stuff. I said, Tyson, I cannot. I am protecting myself. The brain is like a sponge. I don't want to be accused to rip you off. So please, you don't need my approval. You be happy with what you're doing because only you can make yourself happy, not other people. So please do this for yourself. Thank you.
What about your parents? Were they musical as well?
Yeah. My parents loved to dance. You know, what is the great thing about my parents is like they were very passionate. That is when you put passionate together with music, you got everything, you know. And so people asked me, what about your classical, influence? Why do you sound sometimes classical or whatever? I have no idea. You know what I just discovered? I discovered that In Search of Peace of Mind, the first song I wrote, is a waltz.
Really?
Lost Horizon. It's a waltz. And there are so many songs of the waltz. And people ask me, like, what? The only thing I can think of, my parents, when I was an embryo in my mom's womb, they used to dance a lot. So they used to dance to waltz music. So maybe I picked up when I was inside my mom.
Sarstedt, your hometown, is also famous for being the birthplace of Henri Pape, one of the most famous...
Who?
Henri Pape. He was a famous piano constructor in the 19th century. He moved to Paris and he managed to build pianos that were much louder than any previous pianos.
Oh.
He made the instrument a lot more powerful.
Yeah, I never knew that.
Henri Pape.
Amazing.
I think even Chopin might have played on his pianos. Speaking of musical geniuses, when you recorded the first Scorpions album, you worked with one of my favorite producers, Conny Planck.
Ah, yeah. Because he did Kraftwerk, probably.
Yes, and he did the Deutsche Amerikanische Freundschaft and stuff like that. Do you have any memories of...
Oh, he was great.
Yeah.
He was great, you know. And you know, by the way, the solo on Lonesome on In Search of Peace of Mind, on the rest of the album, you can hear that I'm in a very raw state developing as a guitarist, you know. But In Search of Peace of Mind, it's perfect. That solo is perfect. As a 15-year, I don't know where it came from. Everything else sounded like not ripe, but that song dropped from somewhere. I don't know where it came from. I tried to copy it because it's my 50th anniversary next year. So hard to play.
Do you think it was good for you to become so famous at such an early age?
Yes, it was important. It was important so I could live my middle years and create a three-dimensional Michael Schenker, who used to be very stage fright. Because of my middle years, I learned to understand who I am. I created the foundation. If I would have gone with Ozzy Osbourne, I would have had a lot of icing. But because I decided to live my life in the middle years based on Born to Overcome and Born to Be Free, you have to go through some work. And I did the work, and because of that, I got the cake. And I get a lot of icing today. I put the icing on the cake, and I have a fantastic dessert.
I'd like to play you one of the first songs that I think you learned to play.
That was my first song actually was Hippie Hippie Shake.
Oh.
Yeah. And that was my first... You know, I never liked any songs without lead guitar, but that was Shadows was my favorite instrumental guitar.
FBI by the Shadows.
Yeah, it's the Shadows, and I loved. I knew probably all Shadow songs. You know, it's fantastic.
They were an instrumental British rock group who had a
fantastic
bunch of hits in the early 60s.
Yeah, I love it.
Thank you. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I watched the video for your new song, Sleeping with the Lights Out, where you recreate the cover of your debut album with the Michael Schenker Group, which is an image of you strapped to what looks like a dentist's chair in a torture chamber, and there's a sexy nurse peeking through the door, and in the video she swings a hammer. How did you come up with that idea?
I didn't. It was his idea. I had no clue when I showed up at the place, but I tell you, it was spooky at times. But I said to him, wow, fantastic idea. And now that song takes on a new meaning. You know, it's a bloody nightmare. It's a nightmare. That's why you sleep with the lights on. There is the nurse with a hammer. Wow. It was a spooky...
But did she have a hammer on the original album? Like where the image comes
from?
No,
he added all of that stuff. Okay. The only thing that he took from the Michael Schenker Group, the beginning, was the monitor. The monitor. And the monitor had then UFO on it. So why he is using it, he's trying to connect the now with the then, because we're all back together. And so I guess he kind of continued that same theme and put it on, you know, there wasn't UFO in there, but this time it was me starting the Michael Schenker Group, which is what this is all about. And so, but what he did for me was good, was that he gave me an idea now, sleeping with the lights on, and that the whole thing was a nightmare, you know. And so that's why you sleep with the lights on if you do.
Your two latest albums with the Michael Schenker Fest, the new Revelation and the previous Resurrection, have kind of biblical themes on their covers. On Revelation, you're tied to a huge flying V guitar.
Yeah, because of the scorpions ripping me off and torturing me and slandering me, distorting my image and taking it all away. If we cannot have you, Michael, nobody will trash you and slander you. Give you a guitar on stage, out of tune, in front of thousands of people, making a fool out of myself, humiliating me.
Okay, so they're represented by the Roman soldier who's sticking his spear in you.
Yes, Caesar was the guy who was blinded by greed and corruption. The album could have been called Purity and Passion versus Greed and Corruption. So, you know, the one that conquers himself conquers more than the one who conquers the world. Caesar wanted to conquer the world. He was even jealous of someone like Jesus that people paid attention to, and he had to kill him. And so it shows you, you never get anywhere if you have the wrong end of the stick, if you don't know how to say thank you for your love drive, for the help for a love drive album, and you are so blind going the wrong direction and you don't understand anymore how you got there. It's crazy.
And then on the Resurrection album, there's a picture of you at the Last Supper with your band members. It kind of makes you think that you're getting ready to be betrayed.
Well, it wasn't my idea.
Just like Jesus was.
It wasn't my idea. You know, my idea was when we did the video in Japan, I said, and the record deals came in, I said, Michael Schenker Fest in the studio. I wanted a table with lots of feast on it, Hofbräuhaus woman with big bosom carrying pints of lager, lots of wine, and have in the room, in the studio, the Michael Schenker Fest in the studio with the control room in the background. I said to my son Taro, have somebody send me a table with a feast on it so we can put an album cover together the way I imagine it. And what I got was the Last Supper. I went like, what is this? You know, but by that time I thought a Nuclear Blast art department already had an idea. So they started going that direction. Dougie, he must have seen the development of the album cover. He started writing a song called Take Me to the Church. The next thing was Michael Foss writes The Last Supper. I said to myself, what is going on here? We might as well call the album Resurrection and the instrumental Salvation. And it was complete.
Like Jesus, you have been betrayed by some of your disciples at times.
I don't look at the people I'm working with as disciples. You know, I know that Rudolf screwed around with me. That's all I know. And I know there is a lot of business people who wanted to make big money with me. But because in my middle years, I was out of the spotlight, I was not interested in making money for people. I moved to Arizona for 15 years, built a recording studio, and lived my peaceful life. But in the meantime, since I read the false love drive story, and it opened a can of worms, and you have to remember, I had Francis Buchholz and Hermann Rebel, the rhythm section of Rocky Like a Hurricane, in my band for 4 years. I know a lot.
You mentioned somewhere that Graham Bonney, who sings with you, was upset about the Jesus cover, that he felt that it was offensive.
Yeah. That's what I heard. He doesn't understand what's behind it. And so, you know, I am basically not crucified. I'm hanging on the cross with strings, and the band is coming to take me off the cross. And we have won against greed and corruption, and we carry on the Michael Schenker Fest with purity. Graham Bonner just looked at it, and he never asked any questions. He never understood the concept.
I was surprised that Graham Bonney would react that way, since...
Happened. I'd only heard it. I didn't hear it from him directly. I heard it through through my son. So I don't know exactly what he got out of this album cover, but he obviously doesn't understand and didn't have a close enough look.
You know, I heard the stories about how he was fired from your band once.
What was he?
Fired from your band once.
He left the stage. I played the solo. When I looked, the singer was gone. I never saw him again for another 30 years.
I thought he kind of showed his dick on stage and was exposed to
himself. Don't know what he did. I played the solo. I had the singer on stage. I played the solo. I looked at my fingers. The moment I looked back for the vocals, he was gone.
So how long was that solo?
Well, the usual length.
Okay, so you did it like solo for an hour or something. So he just...
I did a lead break. I don't know which song it was, but it was in the first 15 minutes on stage in Sheffield, and Graham Bonnet disappeared from the stage. And I asked the audience, do you want us to carry on? And they said, yes, we did. I never saw Graham again for the next 30 years.
What's going on? Can you correct my vision?
Here's Rory Gallagher with What's Going On, fantastic song, Blues. It's a band called Taste with Rory Gallagher as a guitarist, and then he called himself Rory Gallagher later.
Should I be standing on a chair? My hands are waving. As well as I do now, I'm gonna get to you somehow.
What do you think that you need to become a good guitar player? Is it just practice?
Or it depends on what you're looking for. You know, if you want to become famous and you're desperate with and obsessed with making money and have all the girls in the world and live an obnoxious lifestyle that's called rock and roll and throw televisions out of the window, it's called a wannabe. You don't have to do much. You just do have to throw televisions out of the window and show up on stage. That's all, you know, or use a lot of hairspray, whatever, you know. But if you are an artist and you want to create some great music, you know, you can also go the way when if you realize, like what I did when I was 17, that every person is unique. And if I do what somebody else is already doing, why should I? He's already doing it. So if I open up myself and show my uniqueness, which I did on a daily basis, year after year, I became, as a side product, I had my original own style because it came from within. And Metallica, you know, Slash and Kirk Hammett and all these people said like that it was something they have never heard before. Of course not, because it came from inside of myself. We don't know what's inside you unless you open up.
Still, even though you don't care that much about like the rock and roll lifestyle, you were once awarded with the Marshall 11 Award, which is given to artists and musicians who represent rock and roll excess and living on the edge. I think the Marshall 11 Award is named after the amp knob in Spinal Tap, where they have an amp that goes to 11.
People are obsessed with rock and roll, you know. That's why people write fiction books these days. They can write anything. They have nothing left to say musically. They write fiction books. They write what the audience dreamt of, getting away with murder, screwing all the girls, etc., etc. That's what they love to hear. I'm not interested. But I got that award because I was a big talent. I was a trend maker. I influenced a lot. Somebody told me I am responsible for thrash metal, death metal, etc., etc., etc. So I was a very big influence in rock music. And if you are with such a big name, people want to talk about you. And they want to talk about you in very good ways and in very bad ways. They want to slander you and trash you, but they also want to build you and create you. You know, if you're nobody, nobody wants to talk about you. People can't be bothered to hear a story about everybody drinks, everybody does, you know, everybody has weddings, parties, whatever it is, you know. But if you're famous, if you have a big name, every little thing you do, it's exaggerated and people want to make a big story out of it.
So you mean that that's basically like a myth, the whole Michael Schenker image? Because you have this reputation of being very, very quite volatile or kind of exploding in rage if something goes wrong or if the sound is bad.
No. It's people, you know, like my brother Rudolf bullying me, you know, those people, you know. But the point is, when I started, I was a very sensitive, fragile, a young teenager who was very in love with music, a boy in a sandbox just having fun playing music. I never watched the business. People ripped me off. Managers stole money. They ran away with £80,000 at some point, cross-collateralized me with the UFO debts and the Michael Shane. I mean, I have been ripped off left and right, because I was always looking at my music. I was always just interested in doing music. The other people created all that illusion. They created all that shit. The only thing I'm interested in is music, period. I couldn't care less about throwing televisions out the window. You might kill somebody. You get jailed.
Let's listen to one of your biggest fans. This is Kirk Hammett's solo from Metallica's The Unforgiven. We'll be right back. I watched this sweet clip on YouTube where you're sitting together jamming and he looks really, really, really impressed. Like, you know, he looks like a kid having the time of his life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm his Santa Claus. That's what Peter Mensch told me. But we became friends, you know, and I said to him, hey, Mike, Kirk, no fest without a guest. Do you want to do it? Yeah, let's do it. And so he helped us on the Resurrection.
And here's another guitar hero. Yngwie Malmsteen. This is a song called Rising Force. Out of the darkness, the voices. Who would win a guitar duel, you or Yngwie?
Well, there is no winning. You know, this is not a sport, you know. If you jump, you can measure. Music is a self-expression, you know, or you copy classical music and play it like Yngwie did, you know. But I was writing from within. It's pure self-expression. It was my focus. There is no right expression or wrong expression. There is just expression. You don't win with expression. You may have people who love what you do, which is the icing on the cake.
Yngwie Malmsteen once said in an interview that people would come up to him and say, you know, you should be more minimalistic, you know.
What's that mean?
Less is more. And he was completely, you know, he didn't understand the expression. What do you mean less is more? More is more. You know, he could not understand what they meant.
Fantastic.
Because his goal was to play as many notes as possible.
There's a joke. Is this the note you were looking for?
You know, he could not understand the concept of less is more.
But he was sensational, though. You know, he was sensational when he first came out. Even though I don't listen to music and I stay away from everything, you could not bypass that. That was played everywhere, and it was sensational. I call it sensational because it was so fast. It was so fast, it was impossible. But it only lasted for one moment because so fast, you cannot pick up any notes, so it becomes meaningless, you know, and it becomes all the same over and over and over. But the beginning, when it first happened, it was sensational.
How many guitars do you have?
You know, I always used to have two guitars, just one main guitar, and in case a string breaks, I have a backup guitar. And that's what all I had for many, many, many years, you know. And by the way, I never got paid for live concerts until 91.
Just on the side. They didn't pay you for live concerts until 1991?
yeah, because...
How is that even possible?
Because Michael is an artist, he doesn't care, let's just steal his money.
Are you serious?
Yes, absolutely. And Robin McCauley was there. I said to Robin, I'm not going to do another gig unless we get paid. So Robin and I, we went to Left Bank Management and said, like, no more shows unless we get paid. And all of a sudden, the money was there. Because they always said, there's no money. All of a sudden, the money was there.
So you're not a guitar collector? Because, you know, many people will buy...
No, but now, because I teamed up with a... No, the guitar collector is a wannabe, Rudolf. He collected 30, 40, 50 guitars. He showed them off. He bought one after another, but he can't play. But the people who can actually play, they don't necessarily collect guitars. But I had an endorsement deal with Dean Guitars. So I started creating new models of Michael Schenker. And of course, they started piling up. By now, I've got 20, 30 guitars lying all over the place in storages, in different homes, etc., etc. And a few got even stolen. Like five of my favorite guitars got stolen. Ying and Yang, a color guitar, a chrome guitar, a black and white guitar, and then one of Michael Foster's guitars. And they stole the music, just as we did Spirit on a Mission with Michael Schenker's Temple of Rock.
So did they break into your studio or what happened?
Yeah. And we had to start again, you know. And I just said, okay, let's just say that was a pre-production. The album was going to be much better.
Some musicians, like Paul Stanley, will smash their guitar at the end of the show or smash a less expensive copy.
Yeah, if you can't play guitar, maybe that's the only thing you should...
I've only ever heard of you smashing a guitar when you did it in Tokyo once.
I have smashed the guitar because I was put right in front of a post, like what do you call it, a pillar. I was playing in front of a pillar, you know, and after half an hour, I had enough of it. I smashed the guitar.
But couldn't you have moved from the pillar to...
Well, it was a strange place. It was a small place, and it was, you know, that pillar was right in front because I look for a sweet spot when I play, so I move around. I couldn't move around looking for my sweet spot because there was that stupid thing right in front of it.
Now when the day goes to sleep and a full moon looks, and the night is so black that the darkness cooks, and you come creeping around, making me do things I don't want to do.
Yeah, this is Scream and Alicia actually Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac, the original Fleetwood Mac. Fantastic song, that's all I can say.
Can't believe that you need my love so bad. Come sneaking around, trying to drive me mad.
It's a lot heavier than the stuff that Fleetwood Mac became famous
Absolutely.
For.
Absolutely, it was a complete different story.
Busting in all my dreams, making me see things I don't want to see.
I listened to your new song, We Are The Voice, where the Michael Schenker Fest is encouraging the audience to raise your fists, you've got no choice, bang your head with us boys. How much headbanging do you do these days?
Oh, you know, headbanging has never been part of my life. I didn't write the lyrics, by the way. I never write any lyrics, so I have nothing to do with that. But, you know, headbanging is not something I'm consciously aware of, you know. I just know that people that love that kind of music, they started banging their head, you know, the consumer, the audience, and, you know, just like people in a disco, they start dancing, you know, metal people bang their heads. But it has never been, I've never been a headbanger myself, you know, because I'm actually a creator and a trend maker and a musician. And so I just, if anything, I open my mouth widely or express, make facial expressions of emotions, you know, to be there with the moment and really be there.
I'm a pretty big Slayer fan, and Tom Araya got some severe medical problems from, you know, he developed the helicopter headbang where he swings his neck in a circle.
Yeah, I had a bass player did the same thing, you know. He never took off, but, you know, it's dangerous, huh?
Does it get harder or easier to play guitar as you become older?
I personally think it depends on what your motivation as a guitar player is. You know, I play from within. You know, for me, it doesn't make any difference if it's fast, if it's slow. What is important is that each note has a meaning. I can play until I'm 90 years old, as long as I play with meaning and create goose pimples. So you put one note here, one note there, one note there. Where should the fourth note be to get a chemical reaction and create a goose pimples? That's, you know, in my case, I'm very fortunate.
So you think more in an artistic way than a technical way? Because a lot of, I've noticed that, a lot of metal guitarists are...
If you're hooked on technical playing, you're going to have a problem when you get older.
Yeah,
because you cannot play as fast anymore, et cetera, et cetera. But when you are actually a self-expressive player, making sure number one priority is that each note has a meaning. you can play slow. The most beautiful solos are slow solos I've done in my past. So it's not based on how old I am. It is based on what my motivation is. So if I want to create goose pimples, actually, the faster you play, the less goose pimples you can create because you can't hear any notes anymore.
I'm gonna play you a track that gives me goose pimples. It's by one of my favorite guitar players.
Yeah, surfing music.
Yeah, that's Dick Dale and his Deltones. The king of the surf guitar. Died a couple of years ago. Yeah. And this music is probably most famous for being played in Pulp Fiction, the movie. During the titles. But he had a very special style where he kind of imitated the feeling of waves washing over you.
So he had a mission, he had a vision.
Do you listen to any surf music? Or is that,
No. I don't listen to music since I was 17 years old.
You don't?
I never listen to radio. I never listen to I never listen in my car. I never listen in my home. I never have any music on, period. And Amy is next. She has been with me for 14 years. There is no music. If she wants to hear music, she has to go somewhere else.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of music does she listen to when she's...
Oh, she's a bass player. And she loves heavy music.
But why did you make that decision to not listen to music for the rest of your life?
Me?
When you were 17 years old?
Yeah. Yeah, because I understood, first of all, I understood the brain is like a sponge and it copies anything, you know. And I understood something about, he is already doing that. He's already doing that. Why should I do the same thing? So if I'm unique, every person is unique, I can go inside myself and express something that nobody knows because it's hidden inside of me. So if I make the choice to open up myself rather than copying a trend, I will put a new color out there. I actually explained that earlier already. And that's why Kirk Hammett and all these people, when you do this over years and years and years and years, the byproduct is you create an original sound because you always create from within, from a place nobody knows about. That's why they said, Michael Schenker, he plays something we never heard before. The reason is because it's locked inside of me and it only becomes available if I open up.
But don't you feel the need to, like, you know, expose yourself to new ideas, new impressions?
No. The infinite spring is infinite.
Yeah, but
the infinite spring on creativity. I don't use the external world to be inspired.
But that's like, you know, in the 18th century, someone had an idea that they would put infants in a room without talking to them. They thought that the babies, if they were just locked away from the world, would start talking an original language that was, you know, the way people talked before the different languages appeared. That, you know, if you just didn't get any new impressions, you would find something from deep inside.
I don't care what other people did. I am fascinated with pure self-expression. You have a world with inside yourself. That's where ideas come from. What you just, as an example, is not relevant to what I'm talking about. When you express inventions, ideas, etc., they're coming from inside of you. If you express an invention that already exists, it's not your invention. So if you want to invent something, focus on inventing. Go inside yourself. That's where the ideas
are. But I wouldn't be able to invent anything if I didn't, you know, study the world around me.
Of course, you start of course you start, I love Jimmy Page, I love, yeah. you know, we just played all that bloody yeah. music. I love Jimmy Page, I love Eric Clapton, the way they used to be, not today, not yeah. Long Tall Sally. And I love Leslie West and Jeff Beck and those guys, you know. And that Tony from the from Black Sabbath, you know. So that is when I realized, yes, they play music that I love, the distortion. So what I said to myself, I know what I do. I use that music, which is called Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Black Sabbath, is metal music. I use that as a screen, and I put my pure self-expression of the single string as a lead guitarist, paint that onto that screen, and create self-expression as a lead guitarist.
But that's a very purest way of thinking. You know,
you cannot do it perfectly, of course. There will be always some music in a boutique where I tried some clothes on, where I learned they played the whole bloody Metallica album, and I heard The Unforgiven for the world for the first time. Beautiful song, you know. You cannot escape it, of course. You can't do anything perfectly on this planet, but you can have an idea, and you have an idea of pure self-expression is something I'm very attracted to. That's what I want to do.
I was more thinking that, you know, maybe influences from other genres of music, like say that you listen to Miles Davis or something, would give you
a patcher, or whatever you call it. Amy has a better name for that. And so basically what it is, you take from this guitarist, from that guitarist, you put it all together, and you use all these patches and present it as yours. You can do that if you have fun doing it. It's nothing right, nothing wrong. Just do your thing and stay strong. That's all there is to it.
That's fascinating. Because, yeah. you know, a lot of musicians are patchmakers then, like the Beatles or David Bowie.
Absolutely. And I try the best possible way, of course, not perfect. Nothing can be done perfect on this planet, but the best possible way to be original. And, you know, the fact is that Kirk Hammett and Slash and people like that, they have realized that I did something they had never heard before. So
you're basically a god to them. So
whatever. I'm just a link, you know. I'm a link, you know. The people like Jeff Beck, you know, they are part of a link. I'm part of a link. Kirk is part of the link. And we pass it on to the next generation. We're all part of the link.
I remember when we were young, kids playing wild and free. Ain't no weeping, ain't no sorrows all these passing years. So why the tears are falling so while crying bitterly? Wandering through a shadow land with no escape for me. The old tree! Leaflets in the forest! The old lake! Strung out in the sun!
Yeah, anyway, I have to go now. It's time. Time is over. Up on to the next interview on the other side of town.
Thank you for coming here, Michael Schenker, and good luck with your pure self-expression.
Thank you so much.
You can leave a light on if you're afraid of the dark. Sleeping with the light on to fight back the night is sometimes hard. You can leave a light.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.